This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan is away. When I began working on a piece about tweens and the media for an NPR series which aired recently, I was looking into why kids seem to be acting older at ever younger ages. TV, music, commercials all seemed aimed at turning young children into teenagers. But as I began talking to some of these kids between the ages of 8 and 12, I realized that a parent might have more to worry about than I had originally thought. As it turns out, even young kids are stumbling upon porn on the internet.
You know, mostly people don't, you know, look for it. You just by accident stumble on it. And, like, Google searches, I mean, you don't even have to say anything about it. You'll search, like, you know, whatever, you know. Something
it's like Pokemon, and then
for some reason it comes up and you get these websites.
How old were you when this first happened to you?
Like 6.
No. It happened to me when I was 7 because I searched something on Google. I forget what it. I don't remember. And then it had a picture of a woman going like. And I was like, no.
From sexy music to risque TV shows to porn on the internet, kids today are learning a lot about sex from the media, and parents may not even know all that's out there. Later in the hour, In-N-Out Burger says goodbye, and we say hello as an American muscle car returns. But first, tweens and the media. Are you the parent of a tween? What are your concerns? What surprised you about what your kids are seeing and hearing? And do you know how to talk with them about it? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and our email address, talk@npr.org. To start us off, we begin with Diane Levin, a professor of education at Wheelock College in Boston. She's currently working on a book entitled So Sexy, So Soon, The Sexualization of Childhood. And she joins us from member station WGBH in Boston. Thanks for being with us, Diane.
Hello, Lynn. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I wanted to start out by asking you about your own work in this field, because I know you began your work on kids in the media by looking into the effect of violence in the media, but you've segued into this area of sexuality. And I wonder if you can tell us about that evolution and why you are now focusing on this area.
Sure, I'd be happy to. The story goes back to around 1984, a long time ago, when children's television was deregulated and it became possible to market toys with TV shows, whole lines of toys, and increasingly other products. And when that happened, I started hearing concerns from teachers and parents about the kinds of struggles they were having with war play and especially boys involved with aggressive and violent themes in their play that they hadn't been seeing before. And since I'm very interested in children's play and as well their gender development, I wanted to understand what was going on. And what I found was that after deregulation in 84, almost all of the most popular shows children were watching were linked to lines of toys, and almost all of the best-selling toys had TV shows. And many of them were violent, like Masters of the Universe. Some of your listeners will remember quite well, I'm sure, He-Man, and we had Transformers and G.I. Joe. And boys got more and more involved in violence, and teachers started talking about how there were more gender divisions in the play that they were seeing in young children in classrooms, that children, when boys and girls used to play together more and more now, they were segregating themselves. So right at that point, I started looking at girls, too. And what we found was that girls were much more involved in things like Care Bears and My Little Pony, which had become the popular TV shows with whole lines of toys and other products. And girls were being shown that they should be sweet and they should be nice. And there was this great kind of divide that had begun to happen again. I had been in the field when the women's movement started, and we talked about how to help boys and girls develop the biggest range of potentials as possible. And that didn't mean they'd be exactly the same, but they all had more, you know, as many possible potentials developed. And what we were seeing was boys and girls being narrowed in their play into fewer and fewer themes. Girls were being pretty sweet and nice, and boys were being tough and macho and rugged individuals.
And how does that translate into this whole area of of the sexualization of kids and what they're watching in the media.
Right. Well, a good question, because what's happened ever since that time that I was describing is that the gender divisions have increased. Things have gotten more violent for boys, and the girl scene has gotten more and more focusing on appearance still, and being sexy folded into the appearance. So that from a very young age, girls are learning that the way they look, what they wear, what they buy, affects who they are, how they should feel about themselves and their whole self-image. And it also is how they start judging other people. And that, for young children, is the beginning of thinking out about their bodies and how they feel about their bodies and how their bodies work. So it's part of the beginning sexual development of children. It doesn't start out at 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 with children specifically focusing on sex. It's much more focused on relationships and affection and how, but more and more with the culture as it is now, their bodies, how they look, and what's getting folded in now in terms of sexiness is connected more to older children and teenagers, and it's confusing them.
Now, you have said that talking with parents and talking with people in general about kids and sexuality in the media is harder than the discussion about violence, that people are more
yes.
willing to sort of buy into the discussion about violence.
Right.
But that,
and not only is it harder for them to talk about in many ways, but it's also harder to write about. It's much easier to write about violence. That's why it's taken me much longer to do this book than my work on violence. Because when it comes to something like violence, we all can agree, despite the fact we're not doing a very good job at it, that violence is something we want to try to reduce and not need to the extent possible. We want to find other ways to solve our problems. But with something like sex, that's not what we're talking about. We want to develop a healthy connection to sex and sexuality that goes along with caring relationships. When I talk to people, in fact, there's a level of difficulty talking about it. But at the same time, when I say I'm working on this book, I can think probably 90% of the people I mention it to have a story for me about some issue that's come up with them and children, whether it's teachers, whether it's college students, whether it's parents. It doesn't matter who it is. And that's been true in the U.S. and in the other countries I visited in the last year since I've been working on this book.
We're talking about kids, sex, and the media. If you'd like to join our discussion, the number is 800-989-8255. My guest is Diane Levin, professor of education at Wheelock College in Boston. We're going to bring another voice into the conversation now. Carol Pardon is director of the School of Journalism at Middle Tennessee State University. She was one of the principal researchers on the Teen Media Project at the University of North Carolina, and they studied the media habits of tweens and teens. She joins us now from her office in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Carol, what did your research show about the media habits of tweens, first of all? I mean, how much sexual content is there?
Well, we found overall, we found less sexual content in the media that these kids were choosing to watch and listen to than we were expecting to. Overall, I think the percentage was about 11%. Now, that is different on depending on the particular medium. Television was right at 11%, movies was 12%, but music was 40%. And possibly the biggest surprise, the internet, the sexual content that these kids in our study were looking at was only 6%.
And what age were you looking at?
12 to 14.
12 to 14. Now, your study followed the same group of kids as they matured into teenagers.
That's correct.
To see how their media habits correlated with their sexual behavior. What did you find?
And we found that it did, particularly with our white subjects, in particular, the white girls, so less so with white boys, but it was still significant, and it was not significant for our black population.
When you say significant, and, what does that mean?
That we found that for the white population, they were 25% more likely to have sexual intercourse 2 years after this Time One study if they had a heavy sexual media diet. So the amount of sexual content that they consumed with their media use impacted their early onset of sexual intercourse. And that was after we controlled for all the typical things that you might think would have an effect.
Now, there's a new study from the RAND Corporation that finds a link between sexually explicit lyrics in pop music and sexual behavior.
Yes, I'm familiar with that study. And our results in some ways were similar. We found a very strong effect for music as well. But in the RAND study, they looked at sort of raunchy lyrics versus non-raunchy lyrics. And the lyrics that were deemed not raunchy might still be sexual in content. And so that's why I think some of our results were different. So we show an overall effect just for the sheer amount of sexual content that they consume. And in our study anyway, it didn't matter so much what that particular content was.
Is there any way of knowing whether the media diet is the cause of the sexual behavior or that there's just a correlation and that kids who are more likely to watch sexy things are going to be more likely to engage in sex?
Right. And that is the million-dollar question. It wouldn't be great if we could know that for certain. So part of the difficulty is there's not very many studies that have that deal with sex in the media that have a longitudinal aspect. And the studies that do are kind of coming out now. The RAND study is one that that started the same time that our study started, and there's another one out of California and then out of the University of Pennsylvania. And we're all finding an overall effect from the media that were consumed at time one has an impact on time two. But what we can't control for is all the things that happen between time one and time two, right? So they're not in a vacuum where they haven't been impacted by other things in the 2 years. So I think all of our studies we have point toward an element of causality, but not in this sort of hypodermic needle that if you watch a sexy television program, that means you're for sure going to go out and have sex at an earlier age.
We're going to continue our discussion about tweens in the media after a short break. My guests are Diane Levin, professor of education at Wheelock College in Boston. She's working on a book called So Sexy, So Soon, The Sexualization of Childhood, and Carol Pardon, director of the School of Journalism at Middle Tennessee State University. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Lynn Neary. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We're talking about tweens' interaction with the media and what control parents have, if any, over what their kids are exposed to. Among the recent products marketed to tweens are the Kids Bop albums, collections of popular songs from artists like Gwen Stefani and Coldplay. They're sung by kids. Take, for example, this cover of a Mariah Carey song.
I only think of you. It's breaking my heart. I'm trying to keep it together.
And I should mention that on these Kids Bop CDs, the lyrics are often rewritten to make the music more child-friendly. My guests today are Diane Levin, professor of education at Wheelock College in Boston, and Carol Pardon, director of the School of Journalism at Middle Tennessee State University. You're invited to join the discussion. Are you the parent of a tween? What are your concerns? Give us a call. The number's 800-989-TALK, or email us at talk@npr.org. Diane Levin, I wanted to ask you about something like Kids Bop or some other phenomenon, such as, there are TV shows where they show tweens sort of acting almost like they're college students, or certain kinds of clothes that are aimed to young girls. You know, they all seem kind of benign if you think about the world at large. Maybe they're not so bad. I mean, do you really see a problem with these kinds of things?
Well, what I see is a progression, so that starting at young ages, there are things that are happening that we're pretty desensitized to that don't seem like a big concern, but gradually, when children are the age of the study, the Carol was looking at, they've had a whole history of socialization into viewing themselves as being much older than they are, thinking of sex as being, and sexual behavior, not necessarily sex per se, is very connected to them. But what the part that kind of in that continuum that worries me the most is that they've come to see sex almost as entertainment. I mean, when they see it over and over again on the screen, when they see it, when they get dolls like Bratz dolls that say what you do is get involved in appearance and going out to clubs to attract males, what that does is kind of get girls involved in imitating behavior that they can understand. It gets them focused on appearance and how they look rather than relationships. And what we're hearing about now in older kids' sexual behavior is often that it is sex as entertainment, sex with no complications. Sex is something that's not connected to the relationships that they're having. And in the long run, that's probably the most harmful part of what's going on. Because magically, when they grow up, and they haven't had experiences with what it means to have relationships with a caring partner to whom you're deeply connected with, it's going to be very hard for them when it's time for them to become parents, when it's time for them to have stable adult relationships.
And what about the role of the internet? We haven't really talked about that yet. That's really kind of a separate, somewhat different issue from the whole question of marketing. But as we heard from the tape we played earlier, and as I learned as I interviewed kids, that they are indeed bumping up against pornography on the internet.
I'm hearing that over and over again, and children are curious, and by the time they're tweens, they think they can handle just about anything, contrary to what the boy said that you played earlier. Most of the children that I've talked to and heard about, they're ambivalent about it, but they want to act tough and grown up, and they've learned that they're supposed to, and so they're exposed to content all the time, which they can't make sense of. I mean, one of the things about tweens that's so deceptive, it seems like they have a lot of information and they can deal with a lot, but they don't have the emotional maturity nor the cognitive maturity to really use it and put it together in thoughtful, interconnected ways so that they can start reaching their own conclusions about what's appropriate and what isn't. It's hard enough for adults to do that, but for tweens, it's even harder. And that's the other piece that I think we really need to think about in terms of the role of parents. I mean, it's harder. Parents have to know more and more to be able, you talked about knowing about what the media culture is, but they also need to know how to connect with their kids around these issues in ways parents never had to before. And so parents need much more skill and knowledge than they needed, say, 20 years ago. And so we also need to begin thinking about how can we help parents, but also that it's not fair that there's such a big burden that's being put on parents to deal with these issues.
I think we might have some parents on the line that we want to turn to now.
Great.
And if you'd like to join the discussion, the number is 800-989-8255. And I believe Carol Pardon is still on the line as well.
Yes, I am.
Let's go to Roger, and he's in San Antonio. Roger, go ahead.
Hi, how are you doing? Good afternoon. Yeah, my question really, I don't have any tweens. I've got a 4 and 2 year old daughters, and but they look up to a tween who's 16 years old now, and she dresses kind of provocatively. I've noticed that my 4 year old will imitate that as well, and mom kind of dismisses it as, well, it's style, and I'm looking at it going, well, there's a lot of skin being shown, and I'm just wondering how do I change the attitude of the significant women in their lives who are going to be the role models for my daughters into kind of seeing this as not the style.
All right. Carol Pardon, let me ask you to take that first.
I figured you would ask me that question. Well, I am concerned with what young kids are wearing, and I'm speaking here as a parent. I mean, my children are grown now, but when they were very young, I was careful about what I let especially my daughter wear. And so, you know, Lynn, when you talked about the internet, we seem to put a lot of focus on the pornography that kids will be exposed to and stuff, but we're not paying as much attention to what seems to be maybe things that aren't as important. And I think what this dad's example is a great example. So these 4-year-olds, it's not just because they admire a 16-year-old that they're dressing that way. It's also because that's what they see throughout all of the media that these really, really young kids consume, and then what these 16-year-olds consume as well. And that's why I'm more concerned like the example of that music albums of rewording songs for kids, that popular music, when so much of the music is filled with sexual content, and it's content about, the majority of it is relationships, like Diane was saying, out of context. The research that I've done shows that whenever there is these sort of romantic relationships, the people are never married or rarely in committed relationships. It's lots of provocative clothing that is just all over the place. And so, you know, it's the way a four-year-old would know how to dress. It's what is available there. And so, you know, then you go to the stores and you see the clothes and so on. So,
And this dad was talking about the older women in here kind of going along with it. I mean, what's the
right.
parental responsibility?
Well, you know, I think part of it is because sometimes I think we may have our concern on the wrong target, that we're overly, and this is just my personal opinion, but from my research, overly concerned with the internet right now and not concerned enough with music, which seems pretty innocuous, and kids are listening. In our study, we found kids are basically listening all the time. And so they're listening to lyrics all the time, of which nearly half of those lyrics are sexually explicit in nature, and most of that sex is about non-committed relationships.
And parents probably really aren't paying that much attention to those lyrics.
Exactly.
They're just hearing a kind of boppy sound, and they think it's okay.
Right.
And they're not paying enough attention to that.
Exactly.
Okay.
One thing, if I could just say one thing to the father, I think women have grown up. I mean, if I talk since 1984, this has been going on. And the women who are the mothers of young children today grew up in this environment. So it's not surprising that in some ways they're desensitized to it, too. But I think having conversations about it, talking about your concerns, talking to the 16-year-old about what you're seeing and why you're concerned, not expecting to solve the problem, either it's a problem or it's not, but to make it better than it otherwise would be and have it be something that you're talking about, is really important for paving the way for, as your children get older and the issues become bigger, for you to be able to work on it with your wife and for you and your wife to be able to work on it with your children.
Just before I let both of you go, I just, both of you could answer this for me, and thanks so much for calling in, Roger. You know, it seems like such a sort of almost namby-pamby answer to say, you know, communicating with your kids is the most important thing. But, Carol, pardon, before you go, is it? Is that it?
Yes, but, you know, our research found sort of an interesting result that we were not expecting. We found that if parents just, you know, flat out said, don't do that, that it was very effective. And so sort of the current literature indicates that we should be having these reasoned conversations with our kids. But our research, although we were expecting it not to result in this, was just, you know, parents who will boldly say, you can't do that, stop doing that, I don't want you to do that, and were very explicit, tended to have the biggest effect.
All right. Well, thanks. We're going to take that up with our next guest. Thanks so much for joining us, Carol.
Sure.
Carol Pardon is director of the School of Journalism at Middle Tennessee State University, and she's a researcher with the Teen Media Project at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. And Diane Levin, before you go, the importance of communication.
Yes. Well, what I'd like to say is I think it's time for parents to really get up in arms about what's happening to their children. Communication, I think, is important of all sorts. Communicating our values, saying yes or no is important, but also letting our kids have a voice. But we also need to get up in arms, because what's happening to the society is making it harder and harder for parents, and it's the media and corporate culture that's doing this to make money off of our kids buying those sexy clothes that the father called about. And if we don't, as a group of parents, say enough is enough and it's time to reclaim childhood for our children, we can talk about it, but it's not going to be enough. It'll help, but it won't solve the problem.
All right. Thanks so much for being with us, Diane.
Thank you, Lynn. It's been a pleasure.
Diane Levin is a professor of education at Wheelock College in Boston, and she's working on a book called So Sexy, So Soon, The Sexualization of Childhood. She joined us from the studios of WGBH in Boston. And for more about how parents should discuss sex with their tween-age kids, we turn now to Deborah Rothman, a sex educator and author of the book Sex and Sensibility, The Thinking Parent's Guide to Talking Sense About Sex. She joins us now from member station WYPR in Baltimore. Thanks for being with us.
Certainly.
Deborah, I guess you heard the end of that conversation we just had, and Carol Pardon, who's been doing research on kids in the media, says the parents who maybe talk tough with their kids or certainly are strong in their opinions are the most successful. What do you think about that?
Well, amidst all of this very scary information that we're hearing this afternoon, I think we have to remember and point out to parents over and over again that the decades of research has demonstrated that it's parents who really make the difference here, that parents who are engaged and involved in their children's lives just across the board, but in this area specifically, those parents who are open with their children about this topic, don't have their head in the sand, are willing to address it in as many different ways as it needs to be addressed, that those children grow up healthier. And one of the ways we know that is that they delay sexual intercourse and other sexual behaviors until they are at a developmental stage where they are much better able to handle the responsibilities involved.
Deborah Ruffman, I want to just remind our listeners that you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Go ahead, Deborah.
By the same token, I want to reinforce what Diane said at least a couple of times, which is adults are not getting what's going on here. First of all, the reason that the media is in our children's faces in the ways that they are has to do with the fact that parents have not been doing the job the kind of job that I was just alluding to. Adults for decades and schools for decades have created a vacuum in children's lives around these issues while we weren't looking. The media having discovered, and by the way, I think it's so interesting that we're using the word tweens as if it's a bona fide handle, developmental handle. Tweens, of course, is a marketing term.
Right, yeah.
When it was first coined, it was not about 9 to 12-year-olds. It was about 8 to 14-year-olds. As you know, you have to ask yourself, what do 8-year-olds and 14-year-olds have in common developmentally? And the answer is nothing. What they do have in common is a lot of money in their pocket, and that's what marketing studies in the late 80s showed. And ever since then, because we haven't been paying attention, because there hasn't been the outrage and the outcry, and because adults are being manipulated as much as children here and are seeing children as older than they truly are, we have created this problem, and right, we must take our children back.
Let's see if we can get a call before we have to go to a break. We're going to go to Shelley in Athens, Ohio. Shelley.
Uh-huh.
Hi, go ahead.
Well, I've just been curious what my son's been looking at online, and I always have asked him, are you being nice? Yes. Are you looking at stuff supposed to? Yes. And I've just been shocked at what the blogs of his friends and things have been saying, and I agree wholeheartedly with your person on the guest on your show. Parents aren't doing their job. I realize a lot of work and aren't there to supervise, but what the children are watching and things during the day, and my son's 13, so he's a little past the tween, but they're watching Sex and the City, they're watching all kinds of things, and they know so much more than I knew till I was in college, and I'm just shocked by it. I told my husband last night, this is hard being this monitor, and I feel like I'm the only one sometimes, but I tell my son I'm doing the job I was supposed to do.
Oh, so you're saying this is not what your son's watching, but what his friends are watching?
Well, I don't know that he was doing some things he wasn't supposed to as well, but when I see what he's reading and these kids are just unsupervised, and he's kicked off, temporarily, and so we can get some kind of monitor system, but
what kinds of things have you found out?
Just sexual references and things that they're knowledgeable about and so bold. And I had this conversation with my son. I said, would you sit and talk about this in the cafeteria beside these people? You're more bold writing correct? And he said, oh, yeah. Oh, I would never say that. I said, but you're saying it to each other on the computer, you and your friends. And
oh, that's interesting.
I think it's more brazen. They're much more bold. And I was floored. Some of the parents knew if I knew them better, I would tell them. I did tell one friend's parent, and I said, I think they have no clue.
All right, Shelley, thanks so much for your call.
Uh-huh.
Deborah Ruffin, we're going to have to go in about a minute. We're going to have to go take a short break, so maybe you can just start quickly answering this question and maybe finish it after the break.
I think one of the analogies I love to use with parents is that you have to think of your children as Martians. They're just plopped into this culture. They're trying to figure it out all the time, and even more and more things are being broadcast directly and targeted directly at them. And actually, what her son is being exposed to is not a surprise to people like me. So I think that's why one of the reasons that parents aren't doing the limit-setting job. They have to be willing to see the world in which their children are being raised.
All right, we're going to wrap up this conversation about tweens in the media when we return from a short break. And if you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 800-989-8255. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we are talking about how tweens interact with the media, and our coverage continues online. You can go to npr.org to read and hear what experts are saying about kids' exposure to the media. If you'd like to send us an email, the address is totn@npr.org. If you'd like to give us a call, the number is 989-8255. And our guest is Deborah Rothman. She's the author of Sex and Sensibility, The Thinking Parent's Guide to Talking About Sex. Deborah, before the break, you were responding to a listener's call who had expressed surprise at her son and some of his friends were doing and exchanges, the things they were saying to each other online. And you were saying it's not a surprise to you.
No. And quite frankly, for the first 20-25 years I was in this job, hardly anything surprised me after a while. And I would say toward the end of the 90s, I started to hear things that almost knocked me off the chair.
Like what?
The things that kids were exposed to. Well, for one thing, my seniors, and I teach kids from grades 4 through grade 12, my seniors were suddenly telling me that they sort of didn't recognize their younger siblings who were in middle school. They didn't recognize their social life. They didn't recognize their attitudes about sex. That they seemed to have a different perspective. And I began to worry because this was a mini-generation gap. And I do think that that's explainable by what was said earlier, that these marketers are very good. They push things along quickly enough so that over a 6- or 12-month period, you see some big changes in what our kids are being exposed to. But they don't do it so quickly enough that there's a gasp factor. It's one of the ways that they're very brilliant at what they do.
I just wanted to get another call in here if we could.
Mm-hmm.
Susan is calling from Guilford, Connecticut. Susan, go ahead.
Hi, I was calling. I just had an incident recently. My son is 13, and his end of the year yearbook came in, and he hid it from me, wouldn't let me see it. Once I did tell him I wanted to look at it, I found that some of the young girls had written in his yearbook very sexual things, and I was in shock. I just couldn't believe they would write these things in the yearbook. And then my son would try to hide it from me. This is my first experience with this.
Look at the guilt and shame there. You scratch the surface of this culture of ours, and that looks so new and different. And underneath are very antiquated, centuries-old attitudes about sex that we just haven't figured out yet. And the media know this. They know that we're conflicted about sex. They know that we're conflicted about femininity, and they use it. And so that our children are not just having to deal with what's new, they're having to deal with what's old in our culture, the bathwater that we should have thrown out in the 60s and didn't. I want to make a suggestion to parents. It's very important that in thinking about how to approach your children, that you try as hard as possible not to sound sex negative. Because when we get so upset about these things, and it has to do with sexual content, our children think we're saying that sex is bad. And really, these conversations are not so much about sex. They're about values. They truly are. And what's wrong with the sex that's in our children's lives is not that it's sex. It's that the context in which this information is being presented to our children violates all of the values that parents across the country tell me all the time they want their children to hold in relation to sexuality. And that's where the emphasis needs to be. It's not that sex is bad. Sex is good. Sex is fundamentally positive, but it's also very, very important and very, very powerful. And we want our children to know that it should be attached with a long list of values. And that's what there is to talk about. That what's wrong with that is not the sex part. It's the fact that it's the context in which the sex is being portrayed.
All right. Let's see if we can get one more call in. Sharon in Arizona. Hi, Sharon.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to make a comment, but I've been waiting. I heard the lot that this person you have on now is interviewing. I have to really agree with her. But your previous person had said about just saying no. And just saying no does not give them the information that your interviewee right now was just saying. I have been honest with my children about sex. Sex is a normal part of life. And to lie to them and tell them no goes back to those archaic ideals that sex is bad. And we have to give it to them in the proper context at the proper age. And it's horrifying to me that schools now have almost reverted to pre-60s. They're not teaching sex education. Parents are acting like it's something that doesn't exist. And then we wonder why our kids are looking at it as this taboo instead of as a natural part of life. So I just think that that's really important. We can't just say no. We have to give them the information, but give it to them in the proper context of values of people caring for each other.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Sharon.
Sure.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think you said that beautifully. If you look at the message that these Martians of ours are getting, they're getting just say no from major segments of society, and from the rest of society, they're getting just say yes. And even though they sound very different, it's basically the same message, which is there's nothing for you to think about. We're going to tell you what to do, or it's simple. There's nothing to think about. And what we need to be doing, if we are going to step up to our adult role, both families and schools, we need to be teaching them the opposite message, which is, no, this is very important. You must think about it. And it's our job to help you learn how to think about it.
All right, Deborah Rothman, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
There's a lot to talk to your children about sex, and Deborah Rothman is the author of Sex and Sensibility, The Thinking Parent's Guide to Talking About Sex. That might help you in any conversations you may have with your children in the future. And Deborah joined us from member station WYPR in Baltimore.